a man in statute called his principal military advisor, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So he has military advice, not a question of giving him military advice. It's a question of putting a necessary professional deformation towards military and kinetic operations in charge of the civilian control in the department. As I say, in a Latin American country, we'd say this is ill-advised.
Now, I think General Flynn will be with Trump today as he gets briefed. He doesn't need approval. He's one of the ones who pushed the idea of the child sex trafficking ring that he said Hillary Clinton was involved with and that she had declared war on the Catholic Church. We just have 15 seconds.
Yeah, General Flynn is not unusual. Because we've had Colin Powell, Brent Scowcroft as national security advisors. Not unusual to have a military person. He just seems temperamentally ill-suited to a job, which is to arrange the options for the president and give a relatively neutral array of choices to the commander in chief.
We'll leave it there. Gordon Adams, professor emeritus at American University's School of International Service, distinguished fellow at the Stimson Center. His latest book, Mission Creep. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is the new year. This is 2017. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR.fm and host for this show. And we call it the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. And I'm joined in the studio today in the new year by our WHFR News and Sports Director, John Conroy. Hi, John.
Yes. Hello, Jay. Happy New Year again.
So it was a little cold down in Gros Isle this morning, at least for you, huh?
Yeah, it definitely was. A little bit cool the last couple of days, as a matter of fact. But I'm on the mend as we speak.
Well, we're nice and hot here at Henry Ford College. Oh, boy, oh, boy.
A lot of hot topics.
Well, and also today, a lot of campus is very busy. No, the winter semester has not started. That's not till Monday, but that, of course, is really big. We have now enrollment that equals last year, which means we'll probably end up with more people than we had here last year. So it's a big time whenever a big main semester, regular semester, as they're called, begins. And as I said, classes start on Monday. We'll tell you about Super Saturday, which is tomorrow, in just a moment. But we want to point out that adding to the heat today, there is a high school business conference of some sort that takes place here. I'm not sure if it's just Dearborn or maybe all the area high schools are invited. There's an awful lot of high school students all dressed up in suits and what I assume they perceive is what business people wear to work every day. I mean, the black suits with the white shirts and white ties and the few women that are here, because, you know, women don't go into business. I mean, it's so lopsided. It's like 80% guys out there and 20% women. And I don't understand that. But
they're probably the real bosses, Jay, and the guys are just...
Oh, yeah, they work behind the scene.
Behind the scene, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the usual story. There was a, I thought it was a very sexist and misogynist play by the famous playwright George Bernard Shaw in the 19th century. I think the title was You Never Can Tell. And it was all about all these men that are doing things. And, of course, in society then, women didn't, especially British society, didn't have as much say as they do today. Certainly in America at that point, they didn't even have the right to vote. But George Bernard Shaw, who was a socialist, and you would think that he would believe in equity for everybody, but he came up in this play to try to make an artistic comment, if you will, that showed that the women behind the men really had all the power to do whatever they want, whatever the women wanted them to do. But, I mean, you know, prove that. I mean, if they have so much power, let them be out front. But then again, being out front means you take a lot of the the criticism directly if the job isn't done well. So maybe there might be an advantage, I can understand, for some woman to hide behind her man and yet control him totally. Of course, that's not very equitable to be controlled by another person, whether man or woman, okay. So I just thought the play was just wrong-headed. He was suggesting that the class struggle wasn't all that important because women had found a way around the problem in England for equity. They just controlled all the men through the usual devious means. but it's very well. It's very busy out here, and of course, people are looking for jobs. And we do have a couple of comments, a couple of stories about jobs and jobs for the future coming up here. But I have a couple of newspapers with me, and by golly, let's read some of the stories here. Although there's not much. For Pete's sake, somebody put a video on YouTube showing Mayor O'Reilly in a commercial that he did as an actor back in the 1970s, the mid-1970s. And so they got to do a whole story in background, and I guess that's fun to know that your mayor 50 years ago was an actor. While he was earning a
paid for law school
degree in college. Yeah. Yes, as he said, it did help him in paying for his school. He actually went to Oakland University in dramatic arts and got a degree there, a two-year associate's degree there. And then he went to University of Detroit Mercy, as it's called now, to get a undergraduate degree in theater performing arts, and then continued on for the Juris Doctor degree in law, also at U of D. So he changed from theater to law. So he really knows how to make those dramatic appeals to the juries, because he studied that. And of course, for acting, our mayor previous to Mayor O'Reilly, Michael Guido, he was a communication major, took acting classes and media performance classes at Wayne State University. Oh. So knew how to handle a microphone and how to handle a crowd out there, yeah.
Well produced.
Uh-huh. But so that just shows there's not much happening there. There is a story at the top of the page, though. This is a pressing guide from this last Wednesday, January 4th. Today, if you're listening to the podcast, just for your reference, it is Friday, January the 6th, 2017. The state of Michigan ranks in the bottom third of the nation's annual health rankings, bottom third. And Wayne County ranks 83rd out of 83 Michigan counties when it comes to health outcomes and healthy behaviors. So, John, stop that stuff. You're messing up the averages here. No, John's trying to live a healthy life, aren't we all?
Getting better.
Yeah, there's all kinds of initiatives that people need to take, and let's not get into those New Year's resolutions. Just every day, you try to think about, now, how can I get some exercise? How can I eat more healthy? And so on. Well, at the December 13th Dearborn City Council meeting, Beaumont health officials presented Dearborn residents Dave Norwood, who is the sustainability coordinator in Dearborn, Danielle Charles and Tracy Bisek, with the 2016 Health Communities Champion Award for their outstanding efforts to promote healthy living. So congratulations to those folks, and I hope they'll continue their work. We need to get Dave back on the show sometime. So Dave Norwood, love to have a report about sustainability in Dearborn. Always exciting things going on. He did serve, one of the reasons for his award, says in the story here, as a Healthy Dearborn Steering Committee member, playing a key role in shaping the coalition's programs during the past year. So, well, of course they give him an award because he helped shape the programs. Let's see. Inside, Regan Ford, our Dearborn resident, business owner, past president of the Southwest Outer Drive Neighborhood Association, and he's on the Rotary Club Board of Dearborn. He does a little tribute to Mayor Orville Hubbard, who was a very controversial mayor.
He really did
the policies here.
I mean, his comments were very highly complimentary.
Well, he could have been more complimentary, in fact. But there's, of course, the nagging problem of Hubbard's how he felt about black people and how he enforced certain laws that disadvantaged the opportunity for African Americans to move into Dearborn. And there's a few other things disputable on his record, which is why his statue has now been taken down from public display outside of the old City Hall, and it's now supposedly going to be on display inside the Dearborn Historical Museum, although I don't think that has happened yet.
Regan's article paints a very rosy picture of Orville Hubbard. I read the whole article
He did a lot of things for the city for a lot of years.
Yeah.
But again, there's a few issues about his image online, of course, at thepressandguy.com, there's quite a few opinions that don't agree with Regan about his assessment of the mayor. But nonetheless, he did serve the community. He was the democratically elected mayor for over 40 years. Wow. Okay. Moving on to the Times Herald paper, just to update you, and I get you, there's some late breaking stories for this week, so got to stay tuned in to the new WHFR Journal for those. In the Times Herald, they picked up a story that might have been out there a little while before, but a complainant against Western Union. They're the Telegram people. Mm-hmm. Okay, they do other services via the wires that string around the world. And one of the things they do is they send money. You can go to one office, one place in the world, and give them money, and then they will deliver it to the person or call them up in that foreign country, let's say, and the people come in and they give them money that was given to their office in some other country. And one of the residents of Dearborn said that he was denied the ability to send hundreds of dollars overseas to Palestine, where his wife and children live. They never gave him a reason. And he'd been doing it for years and years. And so, rightly so, they don't give you a reason. They refuse your service. He got the Arab American Civil Rights Committee to begin a lawsuit against them, and we'll see how that goes. But, I mean, that just doesn't seem right unless Homeland Security has been jumping in there or something else. But, I mean, if you refuse service, I think you have to give a reason. Unless, of course, you're doing something that's illegal in the first place. That's against your own business policy. Okay, so turning to, it's interesting that the B-Way Publications, Dearborn Press and Guide, does seem to always have somebody at the Allen Park council meetings. Sue Suchita, which she'd been a writer of about social events and theatrical events for the paper for many years.
Right.
Maybe she lives there. And she's now giving little reports on any sort of, controversial issue that might come up. Harry Sisco, and I remember Harry Sisco because for many years I went to his blues club that was located downriver in Taylor. Which he sold then, and so it's not going on anymore. But he's a Allen Park City Councilman. And the December 20th City Council meeting, he suggested that former Allen Park emergency manager, appointed by Governor Snyder, of course, told him several times that the people involved with the 104-acre former Unity Studios film studio project that cost the city of Allen Park $30 million, it was probably a scam from the beginning, at least I thought it was from what I knew about film studios, but nobody asked me, of course. She kept saying that the SEC was investigating or whatever to Harry, but in fact it wasn't. And so there is a law of rule about conspiracy to commit false pretenses. Never heard of that one before. A conspiracy to commit false pretenses. And he's suggesting further investigation, bringing charges against this former emergency manager. Her name is Joyce Parker. Alan Park is out of emergency financial management at this point. But as Harry Cisco points out, if it hadn't been for that $30 million they lost over this fiasco with the proposed film studios, they probably wouldn't have had to be in emergency management in the first place.
Right.
Kind of upset about that. So good for him. I'm glad that raising some issues there, if there can be some sort of adjudication. I mean, I don't think the former emergency financial manager has $30 million to make up if there's a fine there or something. But obviously, emergency financial managers in Flint and other officials there, because of the water fiasco, are being charged now with criminal behavior.
Yep.
So who knows? Who knows? Okay. I was surprised. I mean, certainly both the papers, the local papers, I suggest you subscribe or we won't have any papers at all. But since they don't have any full-time reporters, people like Sue Suchita is probably just a freelancer at best, who decides to attend those usually very boring, long city council meetings down in Allen Park. At this point, there doesn't seem to be anybody crazy enough, dedicated enough to do that for Dearborn. I tried it once. I fell asleep a couple times, and I thought I found a story there, but then it didn't get covered by the papers, so, oh well, I didn't go back. I didn't think it was time well spent, but then again, somebody needs to do that stuff. Well, so they take a lot of stories and put them on, from the police department and just sort of copy them out, and they put it, called the police blotter section, and sometimes it's very small things, like a woman in Dearborn Heights found her garage door kicked in. So she reported it to the police, but nothing was missing. There's no suspects. But there it is, three paragraphs in the newspaper.
All right.
So what the heck is that all about? I mean, is there a garage door kicking in person who was wandering around Dearborn Heights? These things are such small little things or obvious. I mean, ooh. Police were patrolling the area of Greenfield and Ford Road, and they noticed a man driving a Pontiac Grand Prix with an expired license plate. And when they did a background check, he had a warrant for his arrest for marijuana possession. Ooh. So they stopped him, and they gave him a ticket for no registration and marijuana possession. Ooh. Why does that have to be in the paper? I mean, that just seems like police work. It's just, there's nothing sensational, nothing abnormal.
But it is reported, so that's probably why it got in there.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in the police blotters. Everything the police do, is written there for public notice. Or even reporters can go there and they can copy it down. Who knows? Maybe they can even get it online some way now. But what I wanted to give credit for is that somebody put together a Christmas blotter. And I don't know if they got it from police or what, but in Trenton, there's a Tim Hortons at West Road. Do you know where that is, John?
Certainly.
Okay. Yep. A few local residents thank strangers on Facebook for paying for their coffee in the drive-thru at Tim Hortons in West Road. And the manager there, a Jenny Berryman, said every day someone will pay for someone else. Sometimes it turns into a chain. One person pays for another, that person pays for the next, and eventually, though the chain breaks, eventually the chain breaks. We see the longest chains going during the holiday season, 10 cars or more. Other times, someone will pay with an extra $20 bill for everyone behind them as long as it lasts.
And that line of cars usually stretches right to Fort Street from that.
If there's free coffee there because of somebody else's generosity. I mean, I'm just thinking that it could be something more healthy than coffee, although coffee is not necessarily bad for you, from what they're saying. But if you put in too much sugar and cream, maybe it is. those vanilla lattes, watch out for those.
Well, I bet if somebody asks for hot tea, they'll still go for that, too.
And we have to give you some sort of positive story here, because we're usually talking about things that are critical or crisis moments. But in Wyandotte, part of the Christmas blotter, here's the story. Desire Evans, that's her name, was having a lousy August. Divorce and a subsequent move culminated in a brief hospitalization for a stress-related issue. She was determined to put her life back in order, but realized for that to happen, she'd have to rely upon some kindness from friends along the way. Staying with a friend while getting her footing made giving her Great Pyrenees, That's the kind of dog. Great Pyrenees dog, whose name was Maverick. His full space and attention, a bit problematic because of a problem with her friend and staying with her friend. Evans was determined to find a way to make it work. A friend offered to foster Maverick for a time while Evans found a new place. After much consideration, Evans took the friend up on the offer. This began September 1st, Evans said, but within 2 weeks of dropping him off, I was told I'd never see him again. That wasn't going to happen. I posted everywhere on Facebook about wanting my dog back, including photos and any details I could dig up. End of quote. So the story goes on. Maverick ended up with another owner, one who might not have been aware of how the dog came into his possession exactly. One might say the postings on Facebook didn't seem to be getting Evans anywhere, but in fact they took her to a number of places. There were leads from Traverse City, Michigan, to St. Louis, Missouri. Between calling, posting, and emailing, finding Maverick was becoming a full-time job. Then, on Christmas Eve, Maverick was at last reunited with Evans. Best Christmas present ever, Evans said. He was so excited to see me, scraping on the windows of the car to get to me when he saw me. Whenever I've been away for a day or more in the past, he did the same thing, would be excited and then snub me for a day as punishment for leaving him. That's just what he did this time, too, she says, finally. But there's a picture of Maverick in the paper.
Great White Pyrenees are not hard to lose. As far as the size of them goes, that's a humongous dog.
There's no details here if it was really a crime was committed, or and how far did the owner have to drive to get the dog back? I mean, or the person who had the dog. I mean, is there a story there? Did it come all the way from St. Louis, or was he just down the street or something? But I guess the story there is that there is a value to social media. Which on this show and other news shows we criticize because there's a lot of false news, fake news that gets out there. But there you go. Okay, so Jay's coughing, so we need to go to a pre-recorded segment. And we'll be back with more WHFR Journal after this. This is a word recorded by Jack Lessenberry about journalism and the truth.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. Happy New Year. Since Michigan Radio graciously allows me to express my opinions, I thought I'd start by asserting the holidays were a very nice break, but that they didn't last long enough. Well, that may be the least controversial thing I've said in a while. We're in a new year, about to have a new administration in Washington, and I thought I might start it out by talking about the nature of journalism and what I try to do. I was moved to do this partly by a post on Facebook a few days ago, in which a kind person whom I don't know personally wrote simply, "Thank you for being a journalist." Other people expressed similar thoughts, but someone also posted that I might be a professor and a writer, but that I wasn't really a journalist because I constantly expressed opinions and that I wasn't objective. Well, that's an interesting criticism and deserves a response, and I also think that listeners and readers deserve to know where I'm coming from. Many people think of me as a liberal, whatever that means these days. My view is that words like liberal and conservative are too often a substitute for thinking, both on the part of those throwing them around and on the part of people, especially politicians, who define themselves by labels. My own model for what I try to do is best expressed by someone who saw himself as on the right, the late William Safire, a longtime columnist for the New York Times, who called what he did opinionated reporting with the accent on reporting. He began with a point of view but followed the facts where they led him, which often caused him to make enemies on both sides, as when he concluded that he could not support the first President Bush because he thought he wasn't being truthful about the Iran-Contra scandal. I admired that. My personal journalistic models include, first of all, George Orwell, whose essays emphasize common sense and honesty, and I share the creed of the irreverent H.L. Mencken, who said he believed that it was better to be informed than ignorant. What I seek to do most of all is to give people information and perhaps a different framework for looking at issues. What pleases me most is when people tell me they've heard or read me and then thought, "Wow, I didn't know that. I need to think about this some more." I do have certain fundamental beliefs, which include the notion that this nation must see to it that everyone has the right to a decent education and that we all suffer when this doesn't happen. I think that everyone deserves a chance at a decent life, that we need government to do things like maintain the roads and infrastructure for the common good, including private enterprise. Most of all, I believe in facts, and that both journalists and politicians should try to avoid spreading horse exhaust or getting stuck in some perverse mood. We're living in an era when truth itself is often ignored. I think I have a duty to oppose that, and I'm grateful to anyone who seriously considers what I have to say.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. A long time ago, a graceful man named Dadley Stevenson ran for president against Dwight D. Eisenhower, the much-beloved National War hero. The campaign was hopeless. When he conceded defeat, full of charm and wit as always, a reporter asked if Stevenson planned to run again in 4 years. The candidate looked startled and then broke into a broad grin. "Examine that man's head," he said, laughing. Stevenson would eventually run again, but he knew that nobody in the country wanted to think about another political campaign for a while. Well, we've just been through a far nastier campaign, one that lasted nearly 2 years, saturated every communications medium known to mankind, and which has barely ended. Exactly 8 weeks ago today, Americans woke up to learn to their delight, or horror, that Donald Trump would be the next president of the United States. Since the election, I've talked to or heard from normal people across the spectrum, people not obsessed with politics, and if there's anything that unites them, it's this. Nobody is ready for another political campaign. Nevertheless, many of us got a bubbly tweet yesterday from Gretchen Whitmer, the former Democratic state Senate leader. "I'm in," it said. "I filed a run for governor. I'm ready to fight for a better Michigan." Whitmer isn't the only ambitious politician out there. Michigan Attorney General Bill Schuette is also clearly running for governor and has been for years, possibly since his umbilical cord was severed. But he hasn't formally announced yet. And while it may not do her any lasting damage, I think Whitmer made a mistake in announcing so soon. She has a lot of strengths. She's charismatic, articulate, and appeals to some powerful constituencies. Democrats have wanted her to run for statewide office before, either for governor or attorney general. She begged off then, saying her daughters were too young, though some thought she also calculated that she wasn't likely to win. Whitmer comes from some money, and financing a campaign may be easier for her than for some others. The odds will likely favor the Democrats in the next election. But the election is nearly 2 years away, and she has some weaknesses, too. Though she is, at 45, a relatively young woman, she may be perceived by some as part of the old boy network. Democrats in Lansing tend to favor her, but many of those a little farther away from the I-496 Beltway think Dan Kildee, the congressman from Flint, would be stronger. Nearly all Whitmer's career has been in the legislature. If there's anything less popular than athlete's foot, it's the legislature, and Republicans will say that she never got anything major accomplished during her almost 14 years there. That's not really fair. She was always in the minority. But the way in which they'll attack her was clear yesterday. Gretchen Whitmer would be a disastrous return to the unsuccessful policies of the Granholm era, a flashback to the failed past, said outgoing state GOP chair Ronald Romney McDaniel. Are we really ready for more of that blah blah? Campaigns at all levels may have to start earlier than is decent these days, but I think for most of us, this is a little too soon.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
The best political party in America is not the Dems or the Repubs, but a real party named Fighting Bob Fest.
Okay, I'll tell you about that. We'll let Jim Hightower wait it out after a couple of Jack Lessenberries. Got to move on. First of all, I want to make a comment about Gretchen Whitmer, too, that Jack Lessenberry brings up. He thinks she's introduced herself too soon for the race for governor. There won't be an election until November of 2018. That is a year from this November. But she's out there now. She had served for 14 years in the Senate here in Michigan, in the legislature in Lansing, and was a very distinguished Democratic senator. Republicans are saying, of course, that she didn't get much done because she couldn't. For all 14 years, the Republicans were in the majority. So anything she would try to do, that would be stopped. She was even the Senate Majority Leader speaking for all the Senate Minority Leader speaking for all the Democrats for the last couple of years there. So she's a very intelligent, very articulate woman. We look forward to finding out more about her. I do recommend that you look at the extensive story and coverage on her candidacy in the Arab American News. It's on their website today, and it'll probably be in their printed edition this weekend. You can find that in various places in the city of Dearborn, including the new City Hall, also known as Dearborn Administrative Center, and it should be there certainly by Monday if you want to pick up a copy for free. Or their website is arabamericannews.com. And she... You know, there's no doubt other people will announce their candidacy, but I do know that she's very articulate and she has a lot of great ideas. That and so it might be nice to know about a candidate that has great ideas. And there's plenty of time to find out what her ideas are too, now that she's announced that she is running. So we'll see where that goes, see if anyone else announces on the Democratic Party side or the Green Party side or the Libertarian side, too. We were fairly sure that Bill Schulte, our current Attorney General for Michigan, is going to be running as the Republican nominee for governor. He hasn't announced yet, but oh, boy, he sure sounds like he is. And I don't think they have anyone with equal status on the Republican side to run right now. Because he's gotten always got a lot of attention because of the lawsuits that he's brought to keep a lot of social causes down. And of course, yes, he's done the investigation about the Flint water crisis and so on and so on. But still, we'll see whether or not that gets people's attentions adequately there. All right. So Gretchen Whitmer, that's W-H-I-T-M-E-R. Look at the story in the Arab American News. Jim Hightower. Okay. The Fighting Bob Party is actually a party. It's a one-day affair that they have in Wisconsin. And Bob, I guess La Follette was his name, and to honor his very progressive political stances, they get about 10,000 people together, and there's political speeches, but there's food, and there's no admission charge, but you probably pay for the food or the beverages or whatever for a whole day affair. And Jim Hightower usually speaks there because he's a progressive too. And so his idea was that's a political party really worth joining because they actually have parties. I mean, fun, you know, as well as, of course, trying to do things for a wide number of people who don't have adequate representation in government right now, in my humble opinion. And remember, all opinions on this show...
Yes, all opinions on this show are the host's opinions and not necessarily the views of WHFR or Henry Ford College.
There you go. That's absolutely true. But we thank them for letting us speak what we hope is somewhat fair and balanced. And just like Jack Lessenberry said in his commentary a few minutes back, we don't want you to believe anything we say for face value. If we've stimulated you or challenged you to look into some of these issues yourself and then form an opinion, that's great. That's what we want to do. That's why we talk about alternative views on the show. We are not here to pontificate. We are here to stimulate.
Very okay. Well put.
Yes,
wow.
Absolutely. Want to look back on the Ford deal, okay? Well, this week, okay. A couple of caveats here because constantly I read these commentaries to the stories on the websites, and people don't know what they're talking about. They write comments without even thinking or doing any further research. Oh, it's great. Good for Trump at getting Ford not to go to Mexico. Okay? In this case, there wasn't any buyout like for the Carrier furnace people. He had to come up with $7 million in a special tax break funding sort of deal to keep them from taking their factory from, was it Indiana, to Mexico. And, of course, as we pointed out here, that's not a good example. The federal government doesn't have enough money to give those tax breaks and rebates and extra money to bribe companies to stay in America. So that wasn't well worked out. Plus, Carrier admitted that even though they're going to keep the jobs they have in America, all the extra money is going to go into R&D, which primarily means automation. That is, they won't need many more new workers in the future because they will find a way to mechanize or use robots to build their products. And so that really didn't work out the way everybody thought. Now, in the Ford dealer, let's get this straight. It's true Ford is not going to build a new plant in Mexico costing $1.6 billion. They have announced, however, that they're going to put $700 million into an addition on the plant they already have in Flat Rock, Michigan, which builds Mustangs.
Yep.
But they say that the $700 million is not going to build more Mustangs. It's going to build, they're going to build electric cars there. Of Of course, they already make a Ford Focus electric, which is a compliance car, as it's called, because they can't sell cars in California, by state law in California, unless they have so many cars that have really low emissions. And so they got them available for sale, whether or not anybody buys them. And so
they have much higher fuel emission standards in California than they do.
Yes, they do. And
in
so,
other states. Yeah.
And so Ford and some other manufacturers have, even Toyota and Nissan, they've put their hybrids and their cars for sale in California, but actually nowhere else, because they're not under those same emission control standards in other states, which I think is too bad. But nonetheless, here's the simple fact: is it was revealed in, I can't find the editorial now, but it was a man from Bloomberg News that had the professional opinion, because he's a writer about automobiles and manufacturing and that most of the 700 million is not going to go into what Ford says is 700 new direct jobs, but that's $1 million a job. What that's going to be is a super huge factory that is mostly automated. It's mostly got robots in it building these cars. Okay, they got 700 people there, but my question is, and so was the question of this reporter for Bloomberg News, is how long will they need those 700 even? And how many cars will they produce? They're going to produce an awful lot of cars there. And whether or not you want to buy an electric car or an autonomous car, which I wouldn't go anywhere near, I would never ride in one. And not just because the technology isn't there yet, but I think it's a bad example. Just like I won't use a snowblower. So there. It's the same example. Same example. Okay, I think they're useless. They're not robots, although maybe someday there'll be a robot snow removal system. And some people would love that. But get some exercise for people, for Pete's sake. You know, get out there and move a little bit.
Use that shovel, yes.
Yeah, maybe you're not. So, I'm not real strong. Well, use a small shovel and go slow. Okay,
you don't, a little bit at a time.
Yeah,
that's right.
I mean, your muscles will build up if you start using them. It just takes a little time.
You can alter your pattern after you've done it for so long. Mm-hmm. That's okay to do that.
Plus, it doesn't stop Ford Motor. This whole deal with Ford, so-called not building the plant in Mexico, they're just going to transfer all Focus production because they don't make big profits on small cars that sell for small amounts of money. So they need to build them in countries where it doesn't cost them much to build, and the major cost is labor.
Labor.
Okay. So they're going to just transfer all Ford Focus production from anywhere in Michigan. I think they're in Warren, Michigan now, or is it the one up by Ypsilanti? Anyway.
Rossinville, yes. That's
Rossinville, okay. Yeah. And I know that I'm not sure about the Ford Focus ST, their performance version. I assume as they say all Focus production will go down to Mexico, then it still will, folks. Okay, it still will. And they'll just use these other factories for other things, I guess. I don't know what they'll use Rossinville for example, if they don't have Focus production there. Will they lose jobs there? I don't know. But the point is that the automation that's behind all this that is taking away jobs. I've been reading several books. I mentioned one to you last week called Our Final Invention, by James Barrett, Barrat, from 2013, where he suggests that as soon as artificial intelligence, machine intelligence, thinking machines, get just a little bit more advanced, they'll be able to equal human thinking. And at that point, they'll find a way to be ever increasing their own knowledge and improving their thinking. And at some point, they'll become ASI, or artificial super intelligences, which means they'll be so much smarter than us. And so I've been reading not just that book, but also another book, especially about, it's called Rise of the Robots, which sounds sci-fi, but the subtitle is a little better. It was Business Book of the Year 2015, okay? And the subtitle is Technology and the Threat of a Jobless Future. Mm-hmm. And it's by Martin Ford.
So, good name, yes.
Connection with the Ford story here, but no relation to the Ford family. Mm-hmm. And Forbes.com says, a breathtaking new book on modern economics. How new? Well, 2015. Okay. But it goes into detail about several thinking machines that are already doing such a fantastic job that humans that created them can't even figure out how they got so smart or how they're figuring out things that are way beyond what their human inventors have thought of. And there's so many great examples here, but he does quote a study that was done just a couple of years ago, and a couple of economists suggested by the year 2024, and now it's 2017, so it's only 7 years away, well, they predicted that 50% of the jobs for human beings in America will be gone. And we're not talking about going to Mexico or China with these jobs. We're talking about automation. We're talking, if you want to call them individual robots or whatever, we're talking about how machines will supplant us, not just in manufacturing widgets or cars, okay, little products, little gizmos, but actually it'll get into the professional areas too. And you know, like analysis of diseases, you know, where it's supplanting a lot of doctors because they'll do the diagnosis. In many cases, they can do the treatment. In some cases, they're thinking robots will be able to be better at, like, brain surgery and heart transplants because they know how to be very precise and specific, and they can do a 4 or 5 hour operation without getting tired in that. And we're not quite there yet. But the point is this is coming so fast, people, that the increase in machine intelligence or artificial intelligence, it's going a lot faster, and automation in factories and in professional jobs is going a lot faster than what we can possibly predict. Also, last week I introduced to you the story, it was just 2 weeks old, about Google Translate. And the story from the New York Times Magazine was the lead story there, 1,000 words, talking about how that program seemingly has gone beyond human abilities to translate from one language to another now. In other words, its own intelligence and learning has been improved so much that all of a sudden, about a year and a half ago, it became better than humans at translating from one language to another and keeping the flow, the intent, the poetry in some cases of the original. And they're not even sure how it happened. Now, Google, of course, did that, and their particular kind of super intelligent brain, which only does translations right now, is created on a basis of the human mind. The design of the human mind is called neural learning, and so that the circuits go round and around. They keep improving, and they keep improving themselves at what they're doing as they get more and more feedback from the environment. And so it's only a matter of time before a lot of problems and issues in our society not just can be solved by thinking machines, but they'll take away jobs because they'll start doing creative things and analytical things beyond what a human being can do. Now, I think, John, we're still safe. I don't know if any robots can get on the air and be as wild and woolly as we are, or the cough and have to take a break.
It may start showing up for your TSTCM 189, Joe, OJ. Well, watch out for that.
Yeah, they'd have to pay their tuition first. But and of course, can robots really do puns as bad as I do? I don't think they can. They can't be programmed to do bad things, right?
Maybe have to be deprogrammed to do a pun
right.
that bad.
Yeah. So anyway, so there are some jobs, but it's a real issue. I mean, my granddaughter, 9 years old, what kind of job she's going to have? Where's she going to study?
Yeah.
You know, even people like these business people out here, they go, oh, we'll go into business. There'll always be a need for upper-level managers. No, they're being replaced right and left now by thinking machines that can analyze and supervise better than humans. So don't think it's just the guys on the line that are going to be replaced by automation and robots. It's going to be middle management and then maybe even upper-level management very soon, very, very soon. So it can't be avoided, folks. So this is not, in a way, it's a cautionary tale. But we should think about education. But we should think about where the jobs are going to be. And I'll be mentioning a couple other books that I've been reading, if anybody's interested in this. Again, the one we just mentioned today, Rise of the Robots: Technology and the Threat of a Jobless Future, and Martin Ford, easy to remember that name, wrote that just last year. And every one of these stories, whether it's the Carrier thing or the Ford Motor plant in Flat Rock, if you look just a little under the surface, you see that there's going to be massive automation there that will supplant and even replace any jobs that are there now in just a few years. And so this is not going to hold for long. And I hope Donald Trump, he's just concerned about how good his tweets are from moment to moment. I don't sense that he has a long-term plan here, because anybody that knows about the economy and so-called manufacturing, it's not just manufacturing, it's all jobs and all employment is going to be changing rapidly.
So, a little bit of cautionary regarding automation, yeah. though, Jay.
Yeah.
It isn't as easy a fix as you think it may be, because I've worked in factories with automation coming into focus, and there was so many breakdowns, and so often maintenance than for any other machines, that it took time. You needed extra repair people to do what had to be done who weren't necessarily trained, and you had to have the vendor come in who was with that automation to train the others to fix it.
But that same kind of automation has gotten so much better, so fast,
mm-hmm.
and it's constantly improving at lightning speed. There is the oft-mentioned thing that computer people know about called Moore's Law, is that, and specifically it had to do with integrated circuits, that is the sort of the memory boards in computers and so on, is that technology, and this was stated by Mr. Moore, forget his first name, back in the 70s, that technology is moving so fast in terms of these integrated circuits that their capacity, their size, the speed of them is, and the capacity is going to double every 18 months. Well, as it's turned out, that was pessimistic. It's been increasing. The technology has been increasing such for integrated circuits and all thinking machines and so on at exponentially, they call it.
Yeah.
So it's not just doubling every 18 months. It's going up more than that every 18 months. So the percent of increase keeps increasing. And can it get to be a straight line? Well, the robots today, if you want to use that kind of term, are so much better than the robots of 5 or 10 years ago. Just like Google Translate was only barely able to translate from one language to another, and it was a very rough translation they started in 2007 until 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, all of a sudden, there's this, as Time Magazine said, the great AI awakening.
Yeah.
Which means, oh my God, what happened? Even the people that are working with the program said the machine has made itself so much better all of a sudden. And now it's increasing in more languages. It just started with 8 languages that were super duper wild. And now those same sort of increases are improving all the other 200 plus languages that Google Translate can handle. Now, that's a very limited single purpose kind of AI, but it can go into other things. A lot of people know, remember the Jeopardy shows that were won by the IBM computer Watson.
Yes.
It was called. It was going up against live human beings. And it's a tricky show because of the way they ask questions and the puns and the ideas. And, well, they programmed Watson for 3 years to learn and develop and keep absorbing information about the world. A couple of encyclopedias, zip, 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 you know. And all of a sudden, Watson was smarter than these Jeopardy people. And they've now adapted Watson, and this is a couple of years ago, according to the books, adapted Watson even into medical analysis. Because of its range of knowledge and information, which is constantly growing and improving, it can go and make analysis and creative decisions in other fields, like running businesses.
Yeah.
So wouldn't we love to get some of those chief executives out of there with their salaries that are $10, $20 million. Just put a robot in there, you know, just put a thinking machine in and save the money.
I'm sure that'll drive our product price down too, right?
I don't know. You know, it's going to be a whole new world. And John, I think we might even see it, you and I, even though as senior citizens, you say, well, it's going to take hundreds of years. I think I mentioned also last week that I started reading a novel written back in 1952 by Kurt Vonnegut Jr.
Yeah.
And it was called Player Piano, where the world has developed a point in which there's an awful lot of unemployed human beings, and there's further automation going on in the factories, which is nationwide, And it's very nationalized, almost like socialism, that's supplanting these workers. And they're given, when they lose their jobs in the factories, they're given these really third-rate jobs, just sort of cleaning up the sidewalks or fixing, you know,
menial labor type things.
Menial labor, definitely. Thank you. And yet, the rate of change that's happening now is not reflected in that book. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot of change that's already happened, it's going. I mean, a lot of these, as I said, middle management and professional jobs are going to be gone as well as factory jobs, and nobody's thinking about that right now. So I think we need to be aware of that. Of course, in James Barrett's book, Our Final Invention, he presupposes that artificial superintelligence will be smart enough to realize that the cause of most of the problems in the world today, in terms of pollution and wasting resources and so on, is human beings. And so once
you eliminate
computer,
human beings, you don't have that problem anymore.
Right. You've got to minimize human beings here, and you know, maybe the computer will be good to us and just sort of put us out to pasture.
Sounds like Soylent Green.
You know, but I mean, a nice pasture. I read that poem last week, too. All looked over by machines of loving grace.
Yes, I read
that. But the artificial superintelligence can actually run the whole place better. It can solve all the problems we have right now as long as it keeps humans out of the loop with our greed and our selfishness and our violence. Not necessary to solve problems. And so there are several organizations. One is the Machine Intelligence Research Institute, which is trying to find a way, and it's just a little group in San Francisco, but they've actually got programmers working there, to find some standards of programming that they can suggest that all the supercomputers now being developed could incorporate so that the supercomputers will never turn on us in the future. Sort of like Isaac Asimov's Three Laws of Robotics, that it was part of a fiction novels he wrote in the 40s. But you know, that seems like it will never happen. It just, everything is going so fast. This institute that's working very hard to find these little programming additions that would keep the supercomputers from killing us off, because they'll be, so, well, who's going to take care of them? They won't kill us off until they find a way to take care of themselves and develop resources and, you know, and so on. They're smart enough to realize that. But there's going to be a turning point there at some place in time. And,
I'll try something different, Jay.
What?
When I add my little,
Yeah, you want to go to another story?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's getting so ugly here, I know.
A little lighter note, I think, we need to hit.
Well, I don't know if we need to go to a lighter note, John. But you know, we'll move on, because as some people will say to us, there's nothing we can do.
Yep.
Let me end on a lighter note. There is a group called the Future Life Institute, FLI, and they believe that all these new supercomputers will all be good to us.
Oh, okay.
They'll make us live longer, and we'll be happier, and all our problems will be solved, and they'll just be totally our servants forever. And then I started watching this TV series called
A Benevolent
Humans.
Type of group.
Yes,
right? Okay.
Totally. Yep. Yeah, totally benevolent.
All right.
And but of course, if they don't see the possibility of another twist or turn, that's a problem there. But then there's a TV show I started binging called Humans, where they've got synthetic robots in every house helping out, but a few of them have been developed now by a rogue inventor that are totally human types, even though they're synthetic. And so it's a real interesting challenge at this point in my life, because maybe all of our problems will be solved, but not by us. But hopefully the machines will let us live for a while. Okay, John, you're going to talk about the exciting game that's not played by robots next week here on this campus.
No, that's right. Jay, on a little sports note here, this coming Wednesday, January the 11th, our Hawks, the Henry Ford College Hawks, are taking on Schoolcraft College in a game at 7 p.m. at the Henry Ford College Memorial Gym Building. Mm-hmm. Come out and support your Hawks. They've done very well in the last five or six games. And also, just as a side note, I shouldn't say side note, this is important, new mascot tryouts are going to happen Thursday, January 19th from 11 to 1 in M119. Come and come on out and try out to be a Hawks mascot and cheer us on. Cheer the men on at the basketball games.
Probably you have to be a student at HFC to be a mascot. I'm just wondering.
I'm not certain about that. Okay. I think they'll take the folks that whoever wants
so
to
So if you are great at pantomime and jumping up and down and wearing a Hawk outfit.
Enthusiasm is really what counts.
Yeah, it just exudes right through the Hawk suit.
You bet.
Yeah, okay. But it's a fun game. Main campus here, 5101 Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road. And it starts 7, did you say?
7 p.m.
7 p.m. next Wednesday.
Yep.
Okay. Here's a story from the Arab American News also, and we don't have time to cover all of it, but you should try to find it and read it. National public education crisis impacts Dearborn schools. And, of course, Betsy DeVos is from Grand Rapids, and she's suggested as the new Secretary of Education in the Trump administration. She test ran privatization campaigns in Michigan before assuming her role as this pick by Donald Trump. That means privatizing the schools, charter schools, private schools, taking money away from public education as much as possible. So what's happening is there's some big issues. Nationwide, pursuit of pre-professional programs and teaching has dropped. So students aren't signing up for it, as reflected in significantly lower enrollment rates for these programs in Michigan colleges. So teacher attraction and retention rate is low, which means they get into the program and they don't stay in the program. So even Dearborn is desperate for more teachers. The exodus from teaching jobs is more salient in larger states such as California, declining 53% over the last 5 years. And that's because of stagnant wages and high pension costs that they have to pay for themselves. And Dearborn Schools, the human resources manager there, Robert Seterlin, has identified that as a problem here in Dearborn, too. He mentions we're seeing the same thing with law enforcement, trying to find more recruits there. So teachers are under pressure and under-supported. Governor Snyder in 2011 enacted changes to Teacher Tenure Act, revised school code and Public Employee Relations Act that established new guidelines for teacher evaluations that left teachers more vulnerable to subjection or probation. And obviously it demoralizes the teachers and takes many good teachers, creative teachers, away from their jobs even. And so it's happening here in Michigan, and it's happening around the world. And so what's the answer? In the story by Julia Kassem in Arab American News, she says that they're looking to Finland. Finland, scoring top on international standardized assessments, achieves all of these better outcomes with little homework, well-funded art and music programs, a strong public education system without standardized testing, and by paying teachers well. In fact, they're one of the highest paid professions in Finland is that of public school teachers, with ample time off given to these teachers and intensive teacher training. And they said before implementing such education reforms, Finland, in fact, ranked among the lowest in the developed world in education. So does that tell you anything? I mean, maybe we should all learn Finnish. Actually, we got to finish the show in just a couple minutes. Highway 61 is coming up. The Best in the Blues with Kitty Love coming up at 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock today. So stay tuned for that one, certainly. What else we got, John? Oh, yes.
Oh, right.
Must read. Staring at me. And I'm the one that put this on the copy stand here. Super Saturday, as it's called, folks, until noon tomorrow. Well, actually, till 1 p.m., but you better get there by noon. Our Welcome Center, where they take care of admissions for new students to Henry Ford College and enrollments, too, and they handle financial aid questions and so on. Our Welcome Center is a building on the north side of the main campus parking lot, 5101 Evergreen Road, of course. And they're going to have special hours tomorrow. Normally not open on Saturdays, but tomorrow they'll be open from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. So if you want to get started in our winter semester, as we call it, that begins on January 9th and goes to, I think, finals end in the first week in May, you need to be enrolled, need to be admitted and enrolled by tomorrow, because classes start on Monday. You can't get into a class, you can't enroll for a class if the class has already started. We've had that rule for the last 4 or 5 years. However, if you are enrolled in something, you can add and drop through next week. Okay, and if you have been here before, you can do this all online. And that's fine, that's wonderful. And of course, the web address is hfcc.edu. Still haven't found a web address that's only one C. No. But so HFC, Henry Ford College Welcome Center for enrollment in our winter semester will be open tomorrow morning from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. The north side of the big parking lot here on the main campus of 5101 Evergreen. Okay. Also, I see in the copy stand, it's tribute night tonight at the Redford Theater. And what city is that located in?
Redford, Michigan.
That's right. Who's buried in Grant's tomb.
I thought you were trying to trap me there, Jay.
I know. Just seeing if you were still alert at the end of a long and difficult show.
Right.
Friday, January 6th. That's today. At 8 o'clock tonight, they're going to have two movies. First one starring Debbie Reynolds, The Unsinkable Molly Brown, great musical from the 50s. And then When Harry Met Sally, and one of the actors in that was Carrie Fisher. Wasn't the lead actor. It was Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks. Unsinkable Molly Brown and When Harry Met Sally. By the way, the Redford Theater is a nonprofit organization. That's why we're happy to promote it and support it. A lot of our volunteers there here at WHFR are also volunteers for the Redford Theater.
Michael J. Fox, I think, was in that movie, Jay. When Harry Met Sally.
I don't know about that. I'll have to look that up. You can find out all that information and more about the Redford Theater at Redford Theater, and they spell that TRE.com. Okay? So whenever you're looking up something on the internet and it's a theater, it could be TER or TRE. In this case, Redford Theater, TRE.com. Tickets and other information are there. There's also a phone number. Why not? I'll give it 313-537-2560 is the number, Redford Theater.
I've been corrected. It's Billy Crystal who was in that
movie. Oh, my gosh, yes. And Meg Ryan.
Okay, yep.
And Carrie Fisher's in that somewhere. Well, thank you for listening to our show today. I think we've covered everything, that'll fit. That's the rule for the newspapers. Everything that's fit to print. And fits in the pages. And so thanks for listening. Support your local newspaper. Support the Press and Guide, the Times Herald, Arab American News, and Metro Times. Don't forget about them. And keep on top of the issues that way. And also, of course, come back next Friday. Thank you, John, for being with me today.
My pleasure.
And we're off to a new year. So yes, it's WHFR Dearborn, and we're off to Highway 61 now. So stay tuned for that. Oh, that's my theme song. Oh, I love it. Here we go.